The Temptations of Jacob. Now at least he put on a sackcloth after the first 3 days, and his life was a little less distracted by grief, so that the sons, when they arrived, did not find him in the deepest depth of his affliction. But as yet they had not come. It was their wives who mourned and lamented, supported his head and consoled him, those at least who dwelt with him, for Judah's child of Shua was not there. Likewise Zilpah and Bilhah and little Benjamin, to whom he clung and with whom he sobbed. He could not love the little one in the least as he loved Joseph, and when he looked at him, his gaze was full of gloom, because Benjamin had cost him Rachel. But now he pressed the child passionately to his heart, calling him Benoni for his mother's sake, and swore to him that he would never under any circumstances send him on a journey, neither alone nor even with escort. Always, however big he got, and even as a married man, he should stop here under the father's eye, cherished and protected, and not take a step from the safest roads, for there was no confidence in the world, in nothing and in nobody. Benjamin accepted the assurance, though with a heavy heart. He remembered his excursions with Joseph to the grove of Adonis, and the thought that the dear and lovely one would never again run and jump with him, nor even fan his little hand when it sweated, that he would never again relate his great dreams of heaven and make proud the heart of the little urchin with confidence in his understanding, all that wrung bitter tears from his eyes. But at bottom, he was not capable of realizing what they told him of Joseph, that he would never come back, that he would never be with him again, and was dead. He did not believe it, despite the horrible evidence which never left the father's hand. Our natural incapacity to believe in death is the denial of a denial, and thus an affirmation. It is helpless belief, for all belief is helpless, and its helplessness is its strength. As for Benjamin, he clothed his unquenchable belief in the idea that Joseph had been snatched away. "He will come back," he asseverated, caressing the old man. "Or he will have us come to him." Jacob, for his part, was no child, but weighed down with the stories life had told him. He had drunk too deep of the bitter-tasting reality of death to have anything but a melancholy smile for Benoni's consolations. But he, too, at bottom, was utterly unable to affirm the denial of life, and his efforts to avoid doing so, to get round the necessity of coming to terms with both reality and impossibility, with this inhuman contradiction, were of such an extravagant nature that in our day we should be forced to speak of mental derangement. His household would not have gone so far, but Eliezer was in sore straits with the desperate plans and speculations that Jacob revolved. We are told that when he was spoken to, his sole answer was, "I will go down into the grave unto my son, mourning." It was, then and afterwards, generally understood that he wished not longer to live, but simply to die and to unite himself in death with his son, partly in view of his lament that it was all too bitter and hard that he had to lay down his gray head in death for such a grief. He meant it so to be understood. But Eliezer came to hear otherwise, and in greater detail. However mad it may sound, Jacob's mind was dwelling on the possibility of descending into the pit, in other words, to the kingdom of the dead, and fetching Joseph back. The idea was the more senseless, in that it was not the father, but the mother bride who set out to free the true son from his prison in the lower world, and return him to the upper one, desolated for lack of him. But Jacob's wandering wits led him to make the most fantastic analogies. Moreover, he had long since a tendency to deal freely with sex. He had never known how to make a clear distinction between Rachel's eyes and Joseph's. They were really the same, really those from which he had kissed away the impatient tears. Now, since Rachel's death, they had become indistinguishable. The beloved beings themselves flowed together to a double-sexed picture which was the object of his yearning. And like everything else that was of the upper sphere, this yearning too was male-female, supra-sexual. But as it was Jacob's yearning, and he its, so Jacob partook of this nature, a conclusion which he had long since accepted with his emotions. Since Rachel's death, he had been to Joseph mother and father both. He had taken over the maternal role to such an extent that it conditioned the nature of his love for Joseph. The identification of Joseph with Rachel had its counterpart in his own identification with the departed as well. But a double object can only be completely loved with a double love. It invokes the masculine in so far as it is feminine, the feminine in so far as it is masculine. A father feeling which sees in its object at once the son and the beloved, in which there mingles a tenderness which is proper to the love of the mother for the son, is indeed masculine, in so far as it has to do with the beloved in the son, but maternal in so far as it is love to the son. This dual nature of his love made possible to Jacob the mad projects with which he burdened the ears of Eliezer concerning the bringing back of Joseph to life by conforming to the mythical pattern. "I will go down," he asseverated, "to my son. Look at me, Eliezer. Is not the shape of my breast grown somewhat feminine? In my years, nature probably seeks a balance. Women get beards, and men bosoms. I will find my way into the land without return. Tomorrow I will set out. Why lookest thou doubtfully at me? May it not be possible? One must go always westward, and cross the Chubu River. Then one cometh to the Seven Gates. Nay, doubt not, doubt not. No one loved him more than I. I will be as his mother. I will find him and go down with him to the lowest depth whence springeth the water of life. I will sprinkle him and will loose the dusty bolts for his return. Have I not once already done so? Am I not a master of the arts of outwitting and of flight? I will get the better of the mistress below there, as I did once of Laban, and they too shall deal with me with fair words. Why must I see that thou shakest thy head? Ah, dear master, I enter as far as I can into thine aspirations, and grant that in the beginning all would go according to thy thoughts. But at the latest, at the seventh gate, it must and would be revealed that thou art not the mother. Of a certainty, responded Jacob, and could not in all his extremity quite suppress a gratified smile. That is inevitable. It would become plain that I did not suckle, but begot him. Eliezer, said he, for his thoughts had suddenly taken a turn from the mother-bride to the phallic, I will beget him anew. Might that not be possible, to beget him again? Just as he was, very Joseph, and thus to lead him back from below? Am I not, after all, still here, from whom he came? Should he then be lost? So long as I live, can I not give him up for lost? I will awaken him anew, and by begetting, re-establish his image on earth. But Rachel is no more here, who shared in the begetting, and ye two must unite, if very Joseph is to spring from you. But even if she lived and you begot again, yet would it not be the hour nor the horoscope which summoned Joseph into being? Not him would you call up, neither Benjamin, but a third, whom no eye yet hath seen. For naught happeneth twice, and all that is here is only itself, as it were, forever. But then it may not die and be lost, Eliezer. That is impossible. If everything is only for once, and hath its like neither next to nor after him, and no great cycle bringeth it round again, then can it not be destroyed and thrown to the pigs? That I cannot accept. True it is that Rachel was necessary to Joseph's begetting, and that the hour too must coincide, but of this I was aware, and knowingly have I challenged thy reply, for the begetter is only the tool of creating. It is blind, and knows not what it doth. When we begot Joseph, the true wife, and I, we begot not him, but a something, anything, and that it became Joseph was the work of God. Begetting is not creating. It only plungeth life into life in blind lust, but he createth. Oh, that my life might plunge into death and know it, that I might beget upon it and awaken to life Joseph as he was! Toward that goal is my musing directed. That is my meaning when I say I will go down. Might I beget backwards into the past, and into the hour that was Joseph's hour? Why shakest thou thy head so misgivingly? That I cannot do it, I know myself, but that I wish it. Over that shouldst thou not shake thy head, for God hath so ordered it that I am here, and Joseph not, which is a shrieking contradiction, and rendeth my heart. Knowest thou what that is, a heart rent in twain? No, thou but prattlest when thou sayest it, meaning only that my case is sad. But my heart is literally torn, so that I am forced to think against reason, and must brood upon the impossible. I shake my head, master, for pity, because of thy defiance of that which thou wouldst call a contradiction, namely, that thou art, and thy son no more, for therein is precisely thy sorrow, which thou manifestest to a high degree, and hast performed for 3 days long upon the heap of shards. But now it would be better for thee to give thyself gradually into God's counsel, which saith that thou shouldst summon up thy heart, and speak no longer of such disjointed thoughts as that of begetting Joseph anew. How were that possible? When thou begottest him, thou knewest him not, for man begetteth only what he doth not know. But would he beget consciously and knowing, his art would be creation, and he in his presumption would be thinking of himself as God. Well, Eliezer, and what then? Must man then not presume? And would he be still man if he did not at all times itch to be like God? Thou forgettest, said Jacob in a whisper, approaching his mouth to Eliezer's ear, that I have secret knowledge of procreation more than most men, and well know the means and ways of blurring the distinction between begetting and creating, and how to let somewhat of creation flow into the begetting, as Laban learned when I made the white ewes conceive over the peeled wands, and they cast speckled in my favor. Seek me a woman, Eliezer, who resembleth Rachel in eyes and limbs. There must be such. I will beget with her, mine eyes firmly and consciously directed upon Joseph's image, which I know so well. Then will she bear him again to me from the dead.
Thy words, replied Eliezer, just as softly, make me to shudder, and I would not willingly have heard them. For it seemeth to me they come not only out of the depths of thy lamenting, but even from deeper still. Weighted with years thou art besides, and it is not proper thou shouldst think of begetting any more, to say nothing of such begetting as has a tinge of creating, and should at no time be thought of.
Mistake me not, Eliezer. I am an old man, yet full of virility, and not at all like the angels, as I am well aware. I should like well to beget. To be sure, he added after a pause, my vital powers are for the time cast down by grief over Joseph, so that because of my affliction I might not be able to beget, whereas truly I would wish to, precisely on account of it. Therein canst thou see in me the contradictions which rend me, which God hath brought about?
I can see that thy affliction is set as guard and protection against great sacrilege.
Jacob pondered.
Then, he said, close to his servant's ear as before, one must deceive the watchman and play him a trick, which may easily happen, as he is the obstacle and the motive both at once. For it must be possible, Eliezer, to make a man without begetting him, if one is prevented by suffering and grief. Hath then God begotten man in the womb of woman? No, for there was none, and it is an offense to think of such a thing. Rather, he made him as he would, with his hands, out of clay, and breathed the living breath in his nostrils that he might walk. Nay, Eliezer, but listen, and let thyself be one. If we were to make a figure out of clay, and a thing formed of earth like an image, 3 ells long, and with all its limbs, as God thought of and envisaged them when he conceived man in the spirit and made him after his image, God saw and made man, Adam, for he is the creator, but I see Joseph, the single creature, as I know him, and I will awake him much more eagerly even than when I conceived him and did not know him. And it would lie before us, Eliezer, the figure, and stretch itself in human length on the ground, the face turned toward heaven. We, however, should stand at its feet and look into its face of clay. Oh, my oldest servant, my heart beats high and fast, for how, if we did it? If we did what, master? What new and strange thing doth thine anguish conceive?
Do I yet know already, my elder servant, and can I tell thee? But let thyself be one, and help me to that which I do not yet rightly know.
And if we went round the figure once and 7 times, I to the right and thou to the left, and laid a little leaf in its dead mouth, a little leaf with God's name, I would kneel down and enclose in my arms the clay and kiss it as I could kiss it from the bottom of my heart.
There! He shrieked aloud. Eliezer, lo! The body turneth red, red as fire. It gloweth, it scorcheth me, but I let it not down. I hold it fast in my arms and kiss it again. Then is it extinguished, and water floweth into the clayey body. It swelleth and gusheth with water, and lo, hair springeth up on his head, and nails sprout on fingers and toes. Then I kiss him for the 3rd time, and blow into him my breath, which is God's breath. The fire, water, and breath of air, these 3 bring it about, that the 4th, the earth, waketh to life, and in deep amaze openeth its eyes to me, the awaker, and speakest, Abba, dear Father.
All that maketh me to shudder, said Eliezer, and indeed he was trembling slightly. For it is as though thou hadst won me over for these new and mysterious doings, and that the golem liveth before mine eyes. Truly my life is a burden to me, and thou makest a strange return that I am constant to thy couch of affliction, and loyally support thy head, whilst thou speakest of wonder-making and images, and so enforcest me that I see all with thine eyes, whether I would or no.
And Eliezer was glad of the brethren when they returned. But they were not so.